Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Looking to improve your diet in the new year? Try seeing a personal dietitian with Nourish. Nourish has hundreds of dietitians who specialize in a variety of health concerns, including weight loss, gut health, and more. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your personal dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
But they have to love the quarterback. They love Cam Wharton just like Shador Sanders, and they'll take him. Okay? So you sit there and you say, okay, you're not going to tip your hand because guess what? They're not picking second, guys. They're picking third. And Cleveland's sitting there at two. We're thinking maybe Abdul Carter, Travis Hunter there passing on the quarterback. But who knows? They can't start saying, we're getting Shador Sanders. They don't know what Cleveland's going to do for sure. So you just got to let it play out. We know Cam Ward's probably going one. Cleveland takes Carter, Hunter, and they're sitting there with Carter or Hunter or Shador Sanders. And obviously for me, Carter, Hunter have the higher grade. I don't know how they feel about it, but the bottom line is you're in the division with Jaden Daniels, Jalen Hurts, and Dak Prescott. You better daggone side sure that they are going to think about closing that gap. And Wilson, Winston, and DeVito aren't closing that gap too much.
Mel Kiper laying out some quarterback conversations at the top of the NFL draft. Jeremy and Joe, good morning. Nate's in for Joe this week. Joining us on the Western Hotline to chat some Bills and some draft is Joe Marino for our weekly conversation. He of the Locked On Bills podcast and the Locked On NFL Scouting podcast. Good morning, Mr. Marino. How are you today?
Good morning, guys. I'm doing well. Hope you guys are as well.
Yeah, I listened to you and Kyle on the NFL Scouting do your mock draft last couple days. Listen to that. So I'm dialing in. I'm ready for some names here. We're hearing Mel Kiper. It does seem like this next week or two, Joe, is jockeying season, right? Where you may see some crazy risers and some crazy fallers, and Tet McMillan at receiver might have been wide receiver number one after Travis Hunter, and now maybe he's sliding to the 20s, and the same is true of quarterbacks. You know, I wonder how this time of year in draft prep kind of strikes you as teams start to, whatever, they're leaking information, protecting information. You know, it's smokescreen season, I guess is the short way to say it.
Yeah, it's that time of year where information starts to come out. You feel like maybe in some ways the outside of the league is catching up with what's going on internally, but then you have to foil that against intentional information going out there. You know, it's time to get into the tape. I think that's what is always the best thing to do is you can hear all this stuff and you can hear narratives about the types of people these guys are, but just go to the tape. You'll find a pretty good understanding of what these players can be.
If this were not a league where quarterback is so tilted to the top, like best players in this draft, Abdul Carter, Travis Hunter, is that like an easy 1-2? What's the short list of the best players at the top that are not quarterbacks?
Yeah, I don't think that the best prospects in this draft are quarterbacks, but I do think you know, you'll see them go early because that's just what the NFL does because you need to have a quarterback. But I think it's pretty clear that the blue chip talent in this draft, Abdul Carter out of Penn State, you got Travis Hunter out of Colorado, and I'd even throw Ashton Jeanty out of Boise State in that bucket. I think he's a really special talent at running back. And again, we're throwing aside positional value, but want to think about who the legit blue chip players are. Those three guys, to me, are in a class of their own.
When it comes to Jeanty, what best since Barkley?
Yeah, I think he's in that bucket. Like when I think elite running back prospects, Saquon Barkley, Bijan Robinson out of Texas, and then I think Ashton Jeanty's really in kind of cut from the same cloth. And Gentry, obviously, maybe not quite as explosive as those players, but he's got such good body control and contact balance, and you know the way that he's able to really play through contact and get those tough yards, you know, I think is really special. And so, you know, you see the emergence here of, you know, these lead running backs again in the league, and I think Ashton Gentry is tailor-made to be a focal point of an NFL offense that's going to give a team something to lean on, you know, as maybe not every team gets to have the elite-level quarterback. You're trying to round out the rest of your operation, and I think Gentry can really be the focal point of a big-time rushing offense.
Joe, when you look at defensive tackle and cornerback in this draft, you know, with the Bills sitting at 30, you know, whether they move up, they move back, let's just, for the sake of conversation, say they stay at 30. How many, like, different variations of players do you expect there to potentially be for the Bills? I think that the mock drafts, for me anyways, and even like big boards, I think there is more opinion about slotting the top five at both of those positions than I can really maybe use on any other position. Does that play into the Bills' favor if they really like someone, or if they're maybe a team that's very open to any of the top five players, is that maybe more ideal for the Bills? It seems like there's a lot of jockeying of positions. Sometimes Kenneth Grant is the 20th pick, sometimes he's the 38th pick, and it just seems like that you could say that about a lot of players at both of those positions.
Yeah, I agree. I think you could talk me into a lot of different players being available. So I think the easiest way to look at the corner conversation is probably by eliminating who's not going to be there. And I think there's only three guys that I think for sure won't be there at 30 at corner. And one of them would be Travis Hunter, if that's how you want to classify him. I think Jadae Barron out of Texas, and I think Will Johnson out of Michigan. I don't think those players are going to get to 30, but any other corner, I think, is a legitimate chance, whether that's Trey Amos out of Ole Miss, Azaria Thomas out of Florida State, Maxwell Harrison from Kentucky, Savone Revel from ECU, Darian Porter out of Iowa State. I think the Bills will have an opportunity to decide through several of those options because I do expect them to be available at pick 30. So, you know, you can sit there and I can give you five or six names, but in the reality, the Bills probably don't like all five or six of those players. I think the part that's always difficult for me, and I think anybody that's kind of more on the media side of this, is that you don't get to meet these people. You don't really get to talk to people that have been around them to really get a feel for, you know, how they're wired, what their habits are. And that's really what's going to separate these guys. They're all talented. You know, they're all good football players that are talented, that have a baseline level of athleticism. The separating factors are going to be, you know, who they are as people and what they're going to be willing to put into their opportunity. Just like any other job in the world, you can bring in talented people, but you know, when it's time to execute, when it's time to have work ethic and do the right things to be the best version of yourself, like, what are they going to be like? And I think that's the separating factor. So we could say there's five or six options, but ultimately I bet you the Bills would only like one or two of the players we'd even talk about.
Joe Marino of the Locked On Bills and Locked On NFL Scouting Podcast. Joe, I wonder if there is a lesson to be learned, or chalk it up to sometimes stuff happens. They're not in that different a boat they were when they drafted Kaiir Elam, right? They have a corner that they like. They'd probably like to get a young corner too. And I feel like when we're talking about the difference between, well, this guy excels in man or this guy excels in zone, that doesn't always have to be that the guy is only going to be good at one or the other. Sometimes it's based on the system that they played. And I wonder what would you think is different this time? How similar is it? And which way do you think they would start to lean? Because don't we think that they're going to maybe start playing a little more man based on some of their coaching hiring? If we were to say corner is where they're going to go, how do they walk that line? How important is that differentiation between how a corner would excel?
Well, I think that's a fair call out. And I think the options, the depth of the class, I think is different this year, where going back to 2022, it was Stingley, Gardner, McDuffie. And then you kind of had Kaiir Elam was like the next guy. And there really hasn't been too many hits outside of that. I mean, Roger McCreary is more of a slot. When you go back to that class, Kyler Gordon, more of a slot. Andrew Booth hasn't turned into anything. Cam Taylor-Britt's been high variance. And so, like, the talent cliff was really different to me in 2022 compared to what this class offers. But then I do think it's fair to point out that there's a lot of mystery to exactly what the Bills are looking for. You know, I think they've had a prototype in the past, but I think Kaiir Elam went against that prototype, and we listened. It's funny, we listened to, it was it McDermott or Bean, maybe both of them, at the owners' meetings, talking about how the importance of tackling at corner. Well, Kyrie Elam, that wasn't him at Florida. He wasn't a big-time tackler, physical guy that wanted to, you know, defend the run. So I thought that was kind of interesting that they said that, and then Kyrie Elam kind of definitely doesn't check that box in terms of what he was at Florida. I thought he got a lot better at it in the NFL, but certainly not anything anyone would say is a major strength of his. And so I think I'm a little confused right now as to predicting the exact type of corner that the Bills would want to have. I think the good news is I don't know that a lot of these players that we're talking about in that range at pick 30 are scheme specific, where, you know, you think of a guy like Rasul Douglas and he's only ever going to be a zone corner. Like, I don't feel that way about any of these options that we're talking about. And so I think the versatility of the group, the depth of the group, should open the Bills up to having a good opportunity to get a guy they like at pick 30 at corner if that's the direction they want to go.
Is it more clear the fit that they need at defensive tackle?
I think so, yeah. I think what's absolutely missing is someone to platoon with Daquan Jones, who's, you know, 32, last year of his deal. I thought we saw some age on him last year. So you need a running mate, and you need a successor. And I think you can get that in the same thing, a player that this year platoons with him and takes some snaps, but then is groomed to be the, you know, the primary option next to Ed Oliver in the A-gaps. So, yeah, I think that's more of a defined situation, unless the Bills are willing to kind of adjust and evolve with the types of players they want at certain positions. We've seen that happen at receiver for the Bills. It's happened at linebacker. It's happened along the offensive line, where even at running back, where I think their prototypes have changed. At edge rusher, it's changed across this 8 years now that we've witnessed Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean running this operation. So in a traditional sense, I would think so, unless there is that desire to shift. We saw it with Tremaine Edmonds. They let him go, and they said, we want two matchup linebackers now. Okay, well, if you could tell me exactly what their plan is, I could probably tell you exactly which players would make the most sense. So I think it's a nose tackle, but maybe the Bills suddenly want to have two penetration-style players next to each other. So there's been a lot of evolution, and I wonder if some of that applies to the defensive tackle spot as well.
You know, I don't know if it was Matt Beauvais. Someone asked McDermott about, like, the prototype, like the style or the size of a player. This is not a team, since Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean have been here, that really go after that, like, 340-pounder, that really big run-stuffing two-gap defender. And I think what's unique about this draft at defensive tackle, Joe, especially at the top where the Bills are going to be, I think, in prime position to take a guy. There are guys, I think there are more tweeners, guys that have position flexibility, can play three, can play the one technique, that are right around 300 pounds. Like, to you, would you just maybe lean to, they're going to go with a guy at that tweener spot where, hey, you know, he's going to, you know, be a platoon guy at the one tech, and maybe that's really where he ends up playing a majority of his time, but we appreciate that position flexibility, because you look across the defensive line, and that is the flexibility and position flexibility is highly important. And I just wonder if they look at, if they're going to change something about their ideology, do you think it's that they might want a more of a two-gap defender, a run stuffer that maybe doesn't have the high-end pass rush ability, but gives them a true anchor, which I do think, Joe, I think they were second last in the league last year giving up touchdowns against 12 personnel. If they want to keep Taron Johnson on the field, to me, I think they have to maybe not dramatically change what they want at the one tech, but I think a change of some sort is in order.
I tend to agree. I think sometimes there's a misconception that just being large means you're a good run defender.
Yeah, right.
Jordan Phillips is large. Vernon Butler, large. Those are 330, 340-pound dudes. They can't play the run to save their life. So there's a misconception that, like, there's a correlation between size and run defense. I don't think that's true. I do think that the Bills could use some more mass at defensive tackle, but it doesn't have to be, you know, just a guy that's going to clog space and not be able to move, because – the reality is the most important thing that you can do as a defensive tackle is affect the quarterback, and the Bills' defenses play up the field and have athleticism. So, yeah, I think there's some conversation worth having there, but you're talking about just getting a run-stuffing, you know, guy that's going to eat space and keep the second level clean. Like, that can't be in the conversation at pick 30. You know, there has to be some havoc-wreaking upside there as well, as opposed to, you know, a guy that's just going to be the plug against the run. So I do think that there's some room to have a shift and bring in that type of skill set. But, you know, I think the main thing still has to be the main thing, and it's what type of havoc you can wreak, particularly in this up-the-field penetration-style defense.
Joe Marino, Locked On NFL Scouting Podcast. So you and Kyle Krabs did your mock draft. The Bills in that mock draft, everyone can go download it, listen to it. He was on the Bills' picks. You guys did odds and evens. And Derek Harmon's a name we've heard quite a bit. Is that a run-to-the-podium pick? I guess I want to get your run-to-the-podium picks. Or another way to say that would be Brandon Bean's going to trade up two spots if this guy's still on the board. Because we know he does that quite a bit, right? Like, that guy's there. Yeah. I'm going to move my 2-3 spots. Short list of the 2-3 spot Brandon Bean zone.
Yeah, I thought Kyle did a good job with that pick of Derek Harmon out of Oregon. I think that's a very clean projection of the Bills' defense in terms of a one tech that can play multiple gaps, can defend the run, but gives you some up-the-field ability. I think at defensive tackle, the sprint-to-the-podium players would be Kenneth Grant, D-tackle out of Michigan, and Derek Harmon, the D-tackle out of Oregon. And Kenneth Grant is that 330-pound dude, but that dude has range. His lateral mobility is really, really outstanding, and I think there's some unrealized pass rush upside with him as well. I think he's cut from the nose-tackle cloth that you would say – you know, Dexter Lawrence type player, in my opinion, you know, where a DJ Reader type player, you know, those types of guys, Javon Hargrave before, you know, he kind of fell off the last few years. Like, that's the type of nose tackle I think the Bills should be interested in. I think you would get that in either Kenneth Grant or Derek Harmon. So at D tackle, those are sprint to the podium guys. I think the depth of the corner group probably doesn't, I mean, Jadae Barron, if he's there, I don't think he touches that spot. That would be a sprint to the podium guy. And at edge, you know, I think the depth of the edge class kind of pushes me away from that as well. And I think edge is a primary need, but I think it's a secondary primary need to what holes the Bills have to fill at corner and D-tackle. So Kenneth Grant and Derek Harmon would really be the two somewhat realistic guys that, if they're available, figure out a way to get that done.
And I'm glad you brought up edge, because that's what I was going to get with you on, you know, the two – you know, picks in the second round, Joe. You know, there's some risers. I know Mike Green is a name from Marshall. He's been rising, tested really well. Is there kind of a fit or a name that you really like at either 56 or 62 at the edge position? That, because in the second round, Joe, you're going to try to find a guy with tools that maybe has that higher floor. I don't know how many super high ceiling guys there will be at either of those second round picks, but what name or group of names do you really look at as like, man, I think he's a great scheme fit for the Bills, and like, this is a guy with maybe a little bit of a higher ceiling than you would maybe expect a defensive end or edge player to have in the second round?
Yeah, I really think that there's going to be some really attractive guys there, even with that second-round pick that can fill in this edge position group, where Landon Jackson, perhaps, out of Arkansas, if he gets there, that'd be a really good draft choice. I really like this Ohio State edge, JT Tuamalu. I think he's a really clean fit to the Bills' defense. A lot of athleticism to go with a power component to his game as well, and I think a Baron Sorrell out of Texas really makes sense to me as a clean projection. And then I think the swing guy is Olu Oladejo out of UCLA, who actually played stack linebacker up until like week three of this season, and then he made the switch to edge rusher. And we saw that happen. Like, Abdul Carter did that, and he's going to be a top three pick. He's an unbelievable prospect. Jalen Walker out of Georgia, kind of a hybrid player. And now this guy, Olu Oladejo, who's got size, who's got a lot of athleticism, and I think he's got a dense build that helps him hold up pretty well. I think that's like the swing, bet on traits, bet on upside guy that you might think about there at the end of the second round. So that's kind of a pocket of guys, and I'd expect a couple of them to be available. So I think the Bills can probably wait on that edge rusher, unless just, you know, something crazy happens and you got to, you know, you get a Shamar Stewart or something like that available at pick 30, and then you'd have to turn in that card for sure.
Joe Marino, you know, you're mentioning like some guys, sorry, we have to do it. This guy's here. Maybe you don't expect that. Two questions. I want to go back to that one in a minute, though. Could linebacker sneak in here, you think, anywhere in the first three picks?
I'd have a hard time with it. I mean, even with Milano being an expiring contract, Dorian Williams would be the last year of his rookie deal in 2026, and I thought he made such a big jump year over year from his rookie year to his sophomore season, where you know, you saw both Dorian Williams and Terrell Bernard in year one kind of have some struggles in the Bills' defense. And I think you got a guy with 3 years in of time on task in the scheme. I'd probably want to give him an opportunity in 2026 to be the running mate to Terrell Bernard. So then you're really just talking about a depth player. I think the Bills should draft a linebacker, but to me that's more of a day three conversation.
And finally, you know, I made it this far without asking about a receiver.
I'm absolutely
but I just
shocked.
Wanna, as you're doing the mock, you know, last night with Kyle Krebs, as I'm listening, I wonder if there's any one of those, just like you mentioned about Shamar Stewart, like, is there a, I mean, listen, we're going to address the defense and give a lot, yeah. But this guy's here. We can't not take this player. Do you have a receiver that fits that description?
Yeah, it's 100% Matthew Golden out of Texas. If he's at pick 30, there's just no way you could be upset with that selection, because I think he's exactly the type of receiver that the Bills need, a legit field stretcher, like the best vertical threat in this class. And that's not just because he ran 4.29. I almost wish he ran a 4.31 so that people could stop talking about 4.2 receivers and production. It's like so silly to me.
Because there seems to be a little bit of he doesn't play that speed on tape. Would you agree with that? That he's not the craziest burner, but it's good enough?
Good, because that's the whole narrative. When guys are fast, they can't control their speed. I'm glad that he can run that fast and people don't think he can. Look at him separate. The way that he can separate, that's what's most important to me, is how that speed translates to the field. And this guy runs away from coverage. He's a dynamic route runner that can get down the field. And I think that speed element is exactly what this Bills offense is kind of missing. So that would be the, let's break the plan, because Matthew Golden's there at pick 30. I think he'd be exactly the type of receiver this offense needs.
And last thing, this is a James Cook question, Joe. You know, the Bean this week said, you know, we're on to the draft. There's no reason we can't talk next year. You know, as much as Brandon Bean's not negotiating in the media, he's sending messages. And the next part of this is, what do the Bills do in the draft? Because a pick of a running back somewhere would not be crazy, whether that's special teams or depth or whatever. Could you at all justify a running back with one of those second-round picks? I don't want to listen to it for a second, but I feel like people keep telling me to keep my mind open to it, because the class is that good in that department. Yeah. And if they're not planning to pay Cook, then they could definitely do it.
I'd much rather the Bills draft I think they would want to get a big playback, right? I think that's the best thing that James Cook has given this offense, is that ability to hit the home run. And so, you know, if you could get a Jarquez Hunter out of Auburn or an R.J. Harvey out of UCF, I think you would get a guy that has that type of ability, and you can do it on day three. If the Bills draft a running back on day two, that better come with a James Cook trade. You know,
okay. Yeah.
That needs to go hand in hand, because – I'm all about getting ahead of needs. The one need you don't have to get ahead of is running back.
Yep.
So that's what I would hope to see, is a trade, and then, okay, then you use that capital to reset the money at the position, basically.
Yep. Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast and Locked On NFL Scouting podcast as well. Get those where you get your podcasts. Become a regular. I am. Joe, thanks. We'll chat next week.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Joe Marino. Also sign up for his text club as well. I'm in the Joe Marino text club. I get all my updates. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. I'm glad he said that about running back. I just feel like every time I turn around, someone's telling me, what about running back?
And don't fall for it. It is an every year thing. And I'm just happy we've evolved as a society past, could the Bills take a running back at 30?
That's only because James Cook, and wait until next year when he's not signed.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. I like it. That all sounds good. Matthew Golden, that sounds good.
Schedule rumor.
Yeah, I saw. A team is going to Brazil.
Mm.
Can they stay there?
Forever?
That's what I want. It's the Chiefs, right? The Chiefs. Yeah. The schedule rumor is the Chiefs and Chargers in Brazil. Who would lose the home game? Let me check real quick. It's the Chargers, right. Yeah. Interesting. Not going to lose a game at Arrowhead. Can't lose one of those. I got to watch my 12 Arrowhead games a year. Yeah, schedule rumor. Brazil, Chiefs and Chargers. 803-0550 to join us. Sal, when we get back, we'll wrap the owners' meetings. He's back in town after covering the owners' meetings. We had our rules changes. We'll talk a bit about special teams and how big a change what has just gone.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
On in on the kickoff really is, among other things. You can give us a ring, 803-0550. Jeremy and Joe, Nate's in here on WGR.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Sal Capaccio joining us. He's back from NFL owners meetings. WGR's coverage of the owners meetings live from Florida with Sal. It was brought to you by Window Nations, perfect fit for your home and wallet. Visit windownation.com. He's back in town and mini golf? There was mini golf. The league cocktail party. I saw our buddy Mr. Perino said best night of the year is the league cocktail party. Sal, mm-hmm. I mean, we joked at the combine 30 for 30 on that one. Was that one place, the bar, the hotel bar where Jordan Schultz?
Oh, yeah, the High Velocity.
Yes, Hard Knocks High Velocity.
Way different than High Velocity, for sure.
Okay, what's the difference between the league meeting and the High Velocity meeting?
High Velocity is a late night, just impromptu gathering of people who go down and hang out at a bar, and okay. It's just I want to talk to this person and that person, and you know, it's people having fun, and not that you don't have fun at the cocktail party. It's the annual reception. This is to the nines, totally done up. You need a credential to get in, whether it's with a league, a team, or media. A lot of the coaches, GMs, league execs, they bring their wives and spouses. Everybody is really, the food is amazing. Like, there's no free food at High Velocity. This is free food. We're talking everything from, you know, I don't know, sushi and steak and whatever else, free drinks, alcohol all night long. And the people, Serena Williams was there. Caitlin Clark was there. Guy Fieri was there. All these people were at this place that we were at and were all hanging out together with us.
Yeah. Well, Guy Fieri, huh? Not bad. A who's who?
Yeah, Bove took a nice picture with him and Guy Fieri.
I saw. All right, Sal, so you're back from owners' meetings. We saw some voting on rules proposals. Some things went through. The biggest change, obviously, is the special teams and the kickoff, which, you know, the teams had seen this coming, right? That's why we started to see movement in special teams departments. It kind of, it's a slow boil, as they say, Sal. Like the touchback used to be at the 20, then the 25, then the 30, now the 35-yard line for touchbacks. And that strikes me as now, Nate and I were joking about it during a break, if you're a kicker, you're like hitting into a green and you don't want to miss long. A touchback is a big penalty now. So to me, the dynamic kickoff is a part of it, but just the actual act of kicking the ball into the air and where you're going to land it. That is a massive change in the NFL.
Yeah, for sure. I think more than anything, Jeremy, there's a lot of confusion from a lot of people on why they're doing this, right? And there's a few different elements to it. Yes, the league wants more kick returns. It's a more exciting play for the league. They want more returns. They want more action. They also, you know, want to reduce injuries, which is why you have the landing zone and why you have the setup where it is. And that's why they've gone to a lot of these, you know, types of formations, this different type of formation on the kickoff. What the league tried to do last year was say, okay, they brought all these different people together, special teams, coaches, how can we get more returns to be more exciting, but reduce the injuries? Because the way it used to be, if you have returns and these guys flying full speed down the field 60 yards away, that's what was causing a lot of injuries. That's why they created the setup zone, and where you can only be a certain amount of yards apart. You have to wait till the guy catches it and all that. Okay, that worked out for the league. The league data says injury concussion rate on a kickoff was way down. But it's now similar to a regular scrimmage play, which is what they were striving for. Okay. Now, that being said, even though they had a pretty good uptick in returns, they want more because they feel that they're on the right track and they want even more returns because teams, especially towards the end of the year, were more willing to just bomb it out of the end zone and say, okay, start at the 30-yard line. Well, guess what? We want to see more returns. So what do? Let's move it to the 35. That'll really be penal if you kick it through the end zone. So we'll get the same effect of the returns. We're going to have less injuries. We see this happening. And teams aren't going to be as willing to kick a touchback because you start right at the 35. The other thing that Darren Rizzi said, I talked with him. He's a special teams coordinator who's a part of the competition committee with all of this. He gave a really good answer that I didn't think about. And he said, the other thing that's happening is because you're moving the touchback up, they have decreased punts. And he said, punts actually have more injuries than kickoffs. And because teams are closer and they're now either kicking field goals or going for it more because they get closer to midfield or whatever, not only they increase kickoffs, they've decreased the punt play. There's so much here, actually, with all of this.
You know, Sal, this is the one thing, too, I'll say about the league is if it doesn't work, they'll change it next year. Like, and I think that's the one mm-hmm. thing the NFL has started doing more of, which is, hey, you know, there was talk about a kickoff change, and then they changed the kickoff, and it's been better. And, you know, like the formations, and they wanted to ban the wedge, and it's been, you know. So they're doing these things and trying things, which I might want to say, Sal, that like 15, 20 years ago, this is a league that really didn't want to resist any change whatsoever anywhere. Yep. So at least now you're seeing changes being talked about, being implemented. And a couple of years ago, they said, well, you know, we need to be able to review pass interferences. And then they did it, and they didn't like it, and they overturned it. So I guess for people that are like, what is this going to do? Is this, if it doesn't work, they'll just change it back.
It's a great point, Nate. I think the league has been much more willing, as you said, to kind of do these things where they have been always kind of stuck in their own way. I mean, it took until the 90s to get to the two-point conversion, right? I mean, and then they finally did it. And, you know, we can't change this. We can't change that. Once they started changing, like, moving the extra points back and playing with these kinds of things, they said, okay, like, we're not killing the game. Okay, we can do this. So, really good point on that. I'm going to get back to that in a second. A little nugget here, too, about the kickoffs. Interesting. So, I asked Darren Rizzi. I said, what about just moving the kicker back? What instead, right. If you want this, right? Well, what about just moving the kicker back? You know what he said? It was really interesting. He said, listen, they had a big discussion about that. But what happens is, Jeremy, this goes to your point about the kickers and what they're doing. He said, even though every kicker could still, from the 30-yard line, just kick it into the end zone, they're all strong enough. He said, there's a feeling that it would be disadvantageous to colder weather teams because the kickers have less control in colder weather to be able to land it in the landing zone where they want to. And that's why they don't just move the kicker back because, yeah, they could just kick it through the end zone. They don't want to do that. So those kickers in colder weather cities and playing colder weather games, they're going to be a little bit more of a disadvantage as the season goes on to do something like that. I thought that was really interesting. He said the UFL is doing that, but they play in the spring. They're not going to have these weather issues. All right, that's right. Nate, to your point, this goes to the other rule. Rich McKay actually said, one of the mistakes they made, I think that was actually a word he used, was waiting too long to get away from sudden death overtime.
Yeah.
So that goes to your point about once they finally did that, now we've seen all these changes.
Right. Yeah, I'm thinking about the slow burn of the touchback is the slow burn of the overtime change.
Mm-hmm.
First it's bolt. Now, okay, we're going to adopt the whole thing from the playoffs where both teams are going to have it. Although the 10-minute time stamp is a little – that's one thing that's different about the regular season that, you know, if you get the ball first – and that might be a part of this. You know, in the Super Bowl with the Chiefs and the Niners, there's big debate. Do you want the ball first or second? In this scenario, you might say first because you have mm-hmm. – time. There's no rush, not worried about it. Hey, it took us 8 minutes and 12 seconds and we got our touchdown. And this next team, now we have dictated the kind of drive they will have to get a touchdown. So it's an interesting part of it that the second possession will not have the same advantages. I mean, then again, maybe you might like to have a 2 minute drill kind of offense. So that's a little wrinkle that's different.
Yeah, for sure. So that's what's going to happen, just so everybody knows that they're moving the regular season to the overtime playoff in the overtime format in the playoffs, which is no matter if you score a touchdown or not, the other team's going to get the chance to possess it. However, as Jeremy just pointed out, If you go the entire 10 minutes and you just kick a walk-off field goal, game's over. The other team doesn't get a chance. Yep. So I think winning the coin toss is even more is imperative still in overtime.
Sal Capaccio joining us. We also got the Hawkeye technology for measuring first downs, which at every single opportunity I'm given, I will say, no, it's not a chip in the football measuring.
Nope,
it's not going to change what happened to Josh Allen on that fourth down quarterback sneak.
That's right.
These things are not changing despite every Chiefs fan pretending that something has been swung in the favor of Josh Allen and the Bills. It's just... did they get a first down? Zap it. Yes. That's it. But the officials still placed the ball. So it will be faster, Sal, I guess, right? That's what they're looking for, is to kind of speed things up.
Yeah, listen, I'll even go a step further. You're 100% right, everything you said, Jeremy. We kind of really not going to do anything different. Yeah. I mean, we haven't seen the chains come out in a long time because, I mean, we have, but very rarely, because they look and they go, oh, yeah, it's a first down. We've even seen Hawkeye call down and say, by the way, that wasn't a first down. Go move the chains back. Yeah. Remember that?
Yeah.
Like, we've seen that a few times. So they're really not going to change much here. It's just a way for the league to say we're refining and getting better at it as we go and using this technology.
Yeah. I continue to be a little bit frustrated by the way that everybody seems to be selling it. Oh, it's a new era. Sure it is.
No.
It's not that it's just not that different. So anyway, all right, Sal.
Well, Tush push.
There's a report that it's 16-16, that this is a coin toss right now, and now what? You need eight more votes to ban it. And yep. I heard you get into this really well about how it really comes down to language, maybe.
Yeah, I think so, too. So what's going to happen is there's another owners' meetings in May. That's a little different. There's no cocktail party that I'm going to go to for that one, guys. That's a little more low-key. But they will get together, and there will be a competition committee kind of bringing some stuff up. They'll talk through this. I don't even know if you'll get to a vote on Tush Push. I think it's here to stay this year again. But there's going to be some more refining of this. Language is very, very important here. From what I understand, there's some people raising the concern of the language, saying, well, immediately after the push. Well, do the Bills go immediately after the push, for example? Josh goes to the left. Is that immediately after? There's some language stuff in there that I think they need to work through. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff. I mean, look, I will tell you for sure that it was brought up in the room, in the competition committee, by somebody that maybe the league, and this is my stance, actually. I like this. I'm glad someone brought this up. Maybe the league should go back to the rule from pre-2004, which is literally there was a rule on the books that said you can't pull or push anywhere on the field. They eliminated that. You know why? Rich McKay said because it was too tough on officials to see what was going on down the field in the pile, basically, when that happens. But you guys see it. Guys got – he's kind of stopped. People run in from down the field. They push. There was a rule 21, 22 years ago, pre that, that said you can't pull or push anywhere in the field. They got rid of that, which is kind of why the Tush Push started, because there was no rule against it. Hey, I'm here for that. I'm here for doing that.
Yep. Yeah. That's funny. Like, that's why they got rid of it, because it's just difficult on the officials. All right.
Yeah. And then real quickly, some schedule stuff. I read a report this morning that the Chiefs have requested, according to a source at The Athletic who wrote this, Nate Taylor wrote the story, to be a fixture on Christmas Day going forward, much like the Lions are on Thanksgiving.
Wow.
And I think that's wild, because I'm like, man, Christmas Day to play. Like, if you're on the road, they were last year. That's Christmas Eve away from your family, Christmas morning away from your family, but whatever. They want to do that. And let's remember, the Chiefs are at the Bills this year, and the Bills are the Hallmark movie this year.
Okay.
I just want to throw that out there.
Yeah, yeah. One thing I wonder about it, Sal, you know, if it was a Wednesday, maybe they see it as, we'll take a short week for a really long break right before the playoffs, because that's what they did get. But the next few years, this year Christmas is Thursday, then Friday, Saturday. The next few years, we've got like five straight years of triple headers on Christmas. So there'll be a lot of fixtures there, and I guess the Chiefs want it. All right. Thank you, Sal.
You got it, guys.
So Capaccio joining us on the Western Hotline, wrapping up owners' meetings.
Worst, we can go right at 10 again, Josh.
Worst call Wednesday is coming up, where, well, it was April Fool's Day, and did you get got? You out there, did you get got? Because I know someone that got.
Time now for Worst Call Wednesday, brought to you by Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center.
Okay, Worst Call Wednesday. Speaking of Roswell, join us in the fight against cancer by riding with Bulldog and WGR's Ride for Roswell team. Saturday, June 28th, Once you join our team, you receive an email to pick up your team t-shirt and water bottle at Tom's Pro Bikes on Walden Avenue in Lancaster. Not a rider, you can still support the cause by donating to your to our team and helping us reach our goal. Visit WGR550.com for details. Worst Call Wednesday, that's brought to you by Roswell Park as well. The worst, one of the worst calls you can make is skipping your recommended cancer screening. To learn more about potentially life-saving screening recommendations and guidelines, visit roswellpark.org/screening. So here's the worst call of the week. It was April Fool's yesterday. Owen, did you get got? No, he says he did not get got. Josh, you got got, but your girlfriend put salt in your coffee. You didn't believe something that was fake. You're good?
No,
nobody fooled you.
Yeah.
Nate, what happened to you, Nate?
I got got.
Nate got got. And
I got.
I almost got got by association.
You did.
But that was only because you were telling me something. So if you're a golfer out there, there are these lab putters.
Everyone's
there.
Going nuts on the lab putters.
Space age, yep. Super expensive putter. Everybody wants a lab putter. And there's a link, Labs coming out with a driver. And Nate clicked on this thing so fast. The boosh, finger through the keyboard.
I was like, center, the shaft is in the center. I'm like, and I've never seen anything like this.
It looks like a croquet mallet. And this dude, he's like, true or false, you were two clicks away from buying that driver.
The best part is, I sent it to you, and like after sending it to you, I was like, this is a joke, though. It's a joke. I just wanted to show you.
Yeah. You were.
Could you imagine?
Yeah, you're ready to buy that driver. The shaft is in the middle of the face.
It's got to be.
You can't
something.
Miss the fairway. This thing has got to be space age. That driver, is your worst call of the week. I might have half been got, too. Because you're like, well, if they make the space-age putter, they probably figured the rest of it out. All right. 803-0550. We're open next segment. Got plenty to get to. Joe Yurden joins us on the Sabres win in Ottawa at 9:30. It's Jeremy and Joe. Nate's in for Joe this week here on WGR.